Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. And I'm having one of those days today. You know, usually everything, I try to make a nice environment in order to sit here and do my radio show with you. And today, things have been going wrong on both ends. Both me and my guest are having things going on in our environments. I am having a new water heater installed because my water heater started leaking, and I'm happy to say I'm installing a gas-powered tankless water heater that uses very little electricity just to turn it on, and I'm going to save lots of money on my power bills for heating water. And but in order to do that, they needed to use some toxic adhesive, and there wasn't any way around it. And they were doing it out in the garage, but it still came into my house. And usually I have all the doors and windows closed, so there's no extraneous noises. But today, all the doors and windows are open. So you might hear cars running by or birds in the background or somebody. I've told them not to talk to me from 12 to 1, but somebody may walk in and need to talk to me. So anything could happen on this show, because also my guest, who is in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in Georgia, her power has been off all morning. And so if her power, but it's fine now, but if it goes off again, because I know how it is in these rural areas, if it goes off again, then we need to stop and call her back on her cell phone. And so don't go away. So if anything happens that's strange, don't go away. We'll be right back. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Deb.
My guest today is Diane Dirksen. She's been on many times before. And those of you who have been listening regularly, I'm sure have listened to her before, knows all about who she is. She's a seasoned organic gardener. She lives in, as I said, in the foothills region of the Blue Ridge Mountains of Georgia. And she has more than 45 years experience growing food and herbs and medicinals. And she grows them all year long. And that's what we're going to talk about today. How does she do this? How do you grow things all year long if you live in a place that has spring, summer, fall, and winter? And that's what we're going to find out today. So how is the weather today, Diane, where you are? You had some storms this morning.
It's liquid air out there. I live on a steep hill, and my driveway is a river.
I've lived in places like that.
This is unusual. We've really needed the rain, we're supposed to have thunderstorms about 1 o'clock, but we did have that cut off of electricity today because there's this huge front coming up through, I'm not sure which direction, but anyway, every once in a while in this area, we get these torrents, and I'm very glad for it in many ways because my 90-bed garden and my orchard out there that has herbs and stuff growing around the base of it is all happy and absorbing all this water, and so I'm very happy about it. And so I've been sitting here this morning spinning my alpaca fur and making yarn because I can't go out.
Yes, so today is not a gardening day for you.
No.
But isn't it nice to have things to do inside? Tell us, why is it important to grow your own food? Why do you do this? Why have you been doing this for 45 years?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I love it. You know, it just resonates with me that something about the soil and growing stuff just draws me in. And if I'm not out with my hands in the dirt every day, somehow I miss it. And when I'm somewhere else besides at home, I'm over pulling weeds out of other people's yards and stuff. I mean,
you can come pull weeds out of my yard.
But really, for reasons of passion and everything, I'd say that we live in an era where our food is very challenged, if not dangerous in some respects. It's grown commercially with a lot of chemicals, so we have food safety issues. And we have food security issues because we have things coming in from other countries. And one time I got really sick with salmonella because I ate some produce from a very well-known, I'm not going to say which company, but it was some asparagus, and I was sick for 3 days. And, you know, it's just like, what's on our, what is it made out of, our food? And I want to know what that is. So also, it's important that we grow our own food because we are experiencing a 90% loss of the diversity of kinds of edible foods
yes.
in the world.
Yes.
And so by growing your own seeds and saving them and knowing what you're growing and having it suitable for your area is very important for the future. Now, the other thing is it just tastes great. And you
it
know you're not
great.
Getting it. Oh, it's so good. I go out and graze in my garden. But there's no, I never grow anything that is genetically modified, or I never use any chemicals. And the other thing is it's fresh. I mean, I go out, I want a salad, I go out and pick it. It's in my
yes.
house within 15 minutes. The nutrients are completely there. It's just different than anything you could even buy at a farmer's market. So,
well, I have kind of a suburban backyard. People think that Florida is all palm trees, but it's actually not. The northern, I'm about in the middle of the state on the west side, on the Gulf side. And, just slightly south of where I am is where the palm trees start, you know, where you get have palm trees lining the streets like in Miami. But here it looks in the northern part and the central part looks a lot more like kind of Connecticut. And I used to live in California and I lived in an oak forest, and here I live in an oak forest. And it yes. just is kind of, we have different birds and stuff, but I have kind of a normal looking kind of suburban backyard. But it came with banana trees. And the thing that's so amazing about banana trees is, well, first of all, when I lived in California, they were not local. And so I never wanted to eat bananas as much as I like them. And my ex-husband was always wanting to eat bananas. And I would say, they're not local. They're not local. But that my house came with banana trees. And, and they're so neat because they send out this stalk and they have this flower that opens. And then all of these bananas grow on the stalk. And so then there's a certain point where the whole tree just falls over. And you go, and it's like it brings the bananas right down to you, and you cut off the stalk, and then you bring them inside, and they're all green. But there's like 50 bananas on the stalk, and they're all ripening. They're all ripening at once. And so as they've been ripening this week, I've been cutting them off as soon as they ripen and chopping them up and putting them in the freezer, because frozen bananas make really wonderful ice cream. And so
you know
I'm
what I
have...
like about that kind of thing, about those kind of bananas, is they don't yeah. just taste like bananas. They taste like strawberries and kiwi and a little bit of citrus. The flavor is so much richer.
They are, and I don't even know what variety they are, but what happens is that, you know, the tree grows, it produces its bananas, it falls down, it sends its nourishment back to the earth. And a new tree grows in its place, and we just have perpetual banana trees. We don't have bananas every day, but when we have bananas, they're really delicious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just make all kinds of things out of bananas. So that's one of the joys of growing things in your backyard. But you've inspired me so much in all these talks we've been having that I'm really focusing on now on how am I going to get my backyard to be an edible garden. Mm-hmm. And it's coming up in our growing season now, so... So I have it now. I have the opportunity to have it be the right time of year to plant.
Wonderful.
So just before we go to break, we only have less than a minute, but just tell us a few foods that grow in hot seasons like summer and cool seasons like fall, winter, and spring.
Okay, well, hot stuff is like your tomatoes, your eggplant, peppers, melons, pumpkins, cucumbers, zucchini, summer squash, corn, beans, and then some celery and basil. That they like hot weather. Cold, they like leeks, garlic, onions, all your green stuff, your lettuce, kale, Swiss chard, cabbages, broccoli, Brussels sprouts.
Spinach.
All the mustards. Oh, yeah, spinach, big time, bok choy, Chinese cabbage. And then carrots and radishes and peas and collards and cauliflower and potatoes. Coriander and parsley. Basically, most of the things you think of as salad are cool weather crops.
That's good to know. We need to go to break, but when we come back, we're going to find out how Diane grows food in all seasons of the year. there are tricks and things that everybody can do in your backyard. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Diane Dirks. She's been growing organically for 45 years, so she knows a lot about this subject. And we're now going to talk about different ways you can extend the seasons in the garden. Diane.
Yes.
Tell us about succession planting.
Well, one of the precepts of the type of gardening that I do is you never leave a section of your soil empty. You always have something growing in it. That keeps the soil moist and it keeps the nutrients in and that sort of thing. So as soon as I pull up one thing, like a radish or a carrot or something, I put something new in there right away. So there's every use possible made of that soil. And, you know, I'll put some compost or something in it to keep the fertility up. But I want to keep my garden growing because the most precious thing in a garden is the space. So if you have open space, you're wasting that resource.
So do you put in a seedling or a seed or either one?
Either way. Some things you can't transplant. Like carrots don't do very well. They're too delicate. Some things really like to be put right in the ground, like beans and corn and stuff like that. Although corn isn't something you'd probably do a succession planting with because it takes so long to grow that once it's harvestable, now you're into the next season. So
what kind of plants would you do succession planting with?
Well, especially your annual things like root crops, particularly, you know, rutabagas and garlic and onions and beets and carrots and stuff, things that are living under the ground, they're particularly one-shot deal, you know, like it's ready to harvest. You pull it up, now you got a hole in your garden. But right. Also, some things like cauliflower are a one-shot deal. You know, once the head forms and you cut it off, they don't side sprout like a broccoli does. So you pull it up, throw that, the rest of the plant, maybe harvest some of the leaves and use those, but throw that in the compost. Now you want to put in another cool weather crop, maybe some lettuce or something that, like another cabbage or something. You just keep it going.
Okay, go ahead and tell us about how to protect existing warm weather plants.
Okay, well, as we're going into fall now here in my garden, and some things I know are going to be hit harder than others with cold weather. Tomatoes and peppers particularly, and anything in the nightshade family, which would be eggplant and things like that, they don't like to be cold. So I have sheets of plastic. I go down to Home Depot. I get these big rolls of white or clear plastic. And I have them ready so that when I'm watching the weather, I know it's going to be, you know, in the 30s, maybe even in the low 40s. But I never trust it around here because this is the Blue Ridge Mountains, you know. Mm-hmm. So I cover my beds with plastic, and I use some rocks or something to hold the plastic down. And then the next morning, when the heat comes up a little bit, I go back out and take the plastic off. But I leave the plastic laying there by the bed so I can flip it back over easily. Some people use plastic, some people use cloth. You can get this stuff called cover cloth, which mm-hmm. is kind of all-season fabric. But that's what I do. And the things that are low-lying that would suffer, like peppers and stuff, I do the same thing with them. But I take, once the tomato plants are gone, sometimes they exist quite well throughout the whole season, but sometimes I'll get, you know, one type of tomato that gets too much water or something and it dies, I'll pull those cages that are supports and I'll set them aside so that when it's getting to be dicey weather and I'm not sure how it's going to go one way or another, I'll lay those on their sides alternately, you know, so that the round portion that would be higher off the ground is going one way, and the next way. And then I can put the plastic over that. It keeps it up off the plant from squishing it, especially if we might have rain or something, because rain gathers in plastic and it would hold it down and might squish the plant. So that keeps it up about 18 inches above the ground, which is perfect. And other people, you know, they'll take, you can buy these kits to make tunnels with, it's like a bent plastic or a bent hoop or something of metal, and you stick that in the ground every couple feet, and that will hold it up off the soil, so you're not squishing your plants. But basically, you want some air between the soil and where the plastic is, because that traps heat. And some people even put a big stone now and then in the garden, because in the sun that will absorb heat and radiate it later, and then you'll get a nice even heat for a while. So there's ways you can keep it warm. That's something I wanted to tell you. Are we still together? Hello? I might have lost you. I think we lost our connection.
Okay, let's try this again.
You're the fickle finger of fate has gotten us again.
You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Diane Dirks. She's been an organic gardener for 45 years, and today we're talking about how to extend the season. But before we get into this, I don't know, Diane, if you heard on the news while we were waiting for the show to start about the pumpkin festival in Half Moon Bay, California, where a record was broken, and the largest pumpkin was 2,058 pounds. I can't even imagine what that looks like, as big as a house. Oh, something just fell over in the background. I have no idea what it is. Okay.
It's a pumpkin that ate New York. That's why it's so big.
Anyway, I just want to say that I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. I was born across the bay from San Francisco in Oakland, California. And I spent most of my life until I moved here to Florida 12 years ago in the San Francisco Bay Area. And that was what we did. Every fall was that we would go to Half Moon Bay, and they have this little winding road that goes through the foothills, and on both sides of the road are the pumpkin fields, and they harvest the pumpkins, but they leave them sitting in the fields, and you can just go. It's like 2 or 3 miles of road, and you can just go wander in the fields and pick out your pumpkin, and it's right there where it was grown, and it's just the most wonderful, charming thing to do. In the autumn, I mean, you really know that autumn has come. And you can grow pumpkins in your backyard. They're easy to grow.
Yes, you can. And sometimes more easy than others, although this year we had a blight of squash bugs, which made it pretty tough for me because I don't use chemicals, and I could only pick off, you know, so many a day. One thing that that does help, though, is to know that when they do come in and they're delicious, I have had the most beautiful squash this year. I have these giant squash that I use just like pumpkins, and I've been making pumpkin muffins and stuff from prior years when I had pumpkins growing. And so, you know, if you preserve your food well, you can have anything you want seasonally or unseasonally. It's just using a little planning ahead, which is one of the things that you need to do as a gardener,
yeah.
Because you never know when something's going to become a blight or a bugs or something, you know. You just get used to knowing what to do with your food. You don't necessarily do that if you count on the grocery store, but then you don't know what you're eating either.
That's right. That's right. So how do you turn annuals into perennials or biennials? Wait, first tell us what annuals and perennials are.
Okay, an annual is something that only lives one season, usually summer or winter, and then it dies automatically. And a biannual is something that lives 2 years ordinarily and then dies. Or a perennial, per meaning thoroughly, that's what that word means, per means thoroughly. So it's something that thoroughly lives a long time. And so usually a lot of herbs and ornamentals and stuff, and a lot of things that trees and stuff, those are perennials because they don't die at the end of every season.
Let me ask you this question about perennials, because one of my favorite herbs, which grows here and I totally adore, is pineapple sage. And if you don't know what pineapple sage is, listeners, it's a lovely herb. And in here, over the winter, because it's too hot in the summer, so it may do it differently someplace else. But here over the winter, like at Christmas time, it gives these beautiful red flowers that are edible. And I just walk by the plant, and I pull out the red flower and I put it in my mouth, and it's just like eating sugar. It just tastes like sugar. It's so sweet.
You're grazing.
I'm grazing, yes. And it's my favorite plant because it's so beautiful and it's sweet, and I can eat the flowers, and or I can put the flowers in tea or whatever it is that I want to do. It's just a sweetener, but it's just the flower. You just eat it. And what I've noticed is that it dies down over the summer, and then it comes back in the winter if I don't give up on it. I mean, it completely disappears. And
it's a perennial, but the root is perennial, not the top part. So you just don't want to put anything in there on top of it, thinking there's nothing there, because the root, you're protecting the root.
Yeah. Okay, so that's something that I think people need to be aware of, is that there may be a perennial that isn't growing so that you can visibly see it, like an evergreen. An evergreen, you would see it all 12 months of the year. But it could be a perennial and die back and then come back and then die down and come back.
I tend to have two different kinds of beds. I have perennial beds and I have annual beds. Because if you have an annual growing in a perennial garden and you pull it up, it could disturb the roots of that little perennial. And vice versa, you know, you just don't want to harm the different types of roots. So I keep them separate. And that seems to help keep them.
Oh, that's a good idea. And that way you don't have to wonder what's going on in that patch, because you know.
It also helps to have a label there. So you know.
Labels, good idea. So then at the end of the cool weather, how do you keep your plants going on into the warmer season?
Well, some of them, they get woody and you don't like them anyway, so you let them die off. But some things like Swiss chard and broccoli, which keep throwing out little shoots that are still good, or the Swiss chard, I just love it all year long. There's this thing called microclimate. And a microclimate is just a little area of your garden which may be cooler or hotter than the rest of it. And so I try to plant my winter vegetables that I know are going to live longer than normal, you know, the other annuals that are just winter annuals, in a place where it's going to be normally cooler. But there's this stuff called shade cloth, which you can get through on the internet or from a nursery supply store. And you can keep your tomato plants on the side, like we talked about before, or you can buy these little hoops that you stick in the ground that keep anything that, you know, any cloth up above the plant, and that will help just so that you keep it cooler. So you're not, they just don't like to be too hot. They tend to what we call bolt. In other words, they go to seed, and then that's it for the year.
Happens here. I know when it starts getting warm. I mean, even if you couldn't feel the temperature here, you would know when it would start getting hot, because the plants all bolt. They send up a stalk with a pretty flower on it, and that's the end of the plant.
Right. They think it. They know that it's their only chance of reproduction. So they're going to be very busy putting out those flowers. And even if you try and pick off the flowers, they're just going to be very insistent on it, because it's the only way they know they're going to keep going into the future.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about, I'm thinking about cut and come again lettuce. Do you consider that to be a way of extending a season? Or at least you would be extending the plant.
Yes, that works. There are a couple different kinds of that. There's just leaf lettuce that you pick off the leaves and it keeps growing.
Right.
Or there's a kind that where it'll just, you cut it off and leave an inch or two above the ground, and then it'll send forth more plants. But usually they're going to suffer with too much heat. Lettuces tend to be delicate, so you're going to have to keep them. Some people just use white sheets. You know, old sheets, go to the thrift store and buy some old white sheets, cut them into, you know, six feet, or, you know, cut them so that they'll fit over a hoop, and then you can keep it going for quite some time because it tends to reflect the extra heat. But you have to make sure you keep them moist because otherwise they'll dehydrate and die too.
Yeah, I'm thinking about seeing this year if I can keep some of my lettuces going and things like that. Because there's a certain time of year, like at this time of year, it's still raining. And so it's still a little early just to start planting. And then by the time I get the plants in, then it's only a few months. And then it gets to be summer and they're all starting to bolt. But I'm really trying to start early now this year so that I can have as much growing time through the winter as possible.
That's an important point.
Good. Well, we'll talk about it more when we come back from our break. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Diane Dirks, and we're talking about how to extend the seasons, how to extend the seasons so that you can grow food all year long. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Diane Dirks. She's been an organic gardener for 45 years. You started when you were 6, right?
Actually, 3.
3, yeah. I think we've heard that story. Okay, so
my mother gave me my first garden when I was 3 years old. It's in my blood.
And so next time we'll hear about how you started in the womb gardening.
Oh, yeah.
Or in your past life. In your past life, that's why it's 45 years. Okay. So before the break, I made a comment about needing to start my garden early enough. And you said that's a very important point. Tell us more about that.
Well, if you start everything in the ground as a seed, you're waiting for the growth to occur that you could start in another location earlier and transplant it and get a lot more use out of your garden beds. Because remember, your garden bed space is very precious. And so if you can start it in little seed cells or little Dixie cups or whatever, start your plants early in a windowsill or even outside in something that's called a cold frame, which is sort of like just a box with glass windows over the top of it. I make mine out of cinder blocks and old windows. It keeps warmer in there, and then you can start early, and then you have more time, because by the time it's warm enough to put it in the soil, your soil is not going to kill your plant, then you've got a 6-inch plant that just goes in and starts doing its thing really early. So I like to get a head start. And around here, people brag about how soon they get their stuff in, because I got mine in June, and I'm going, and then someone else is saying, hey, heck, mine in the end of February. My tomato plants are already, 8 feet tall or something. It's a game, but
well,
help,
I think,
to get a start.
Yeah. I think that this is a really important point to be talking about. If you're going to extend the season, have your plant ready. Especially if you're going to be growing from seed. And I think that as easy as it is to just go down to the nursery center and buy seedlings in 6-packs, if you want to have variety and heirloom varieties, then you're going to have to grow them from seed. And this is why gardeners spend the winter reading their seed catalogs and ordering things so that they can be ready with having started their seeds when it's time to put things in the ground. And,
right. Well, obviously, the best thing would be to have a greenhouse and to heat it up,
Yeah, yeah.
I have
tell
to tell you, there
that.
Is this thing. It's called a rocket mass heater, and it's made with, you make it yourself with bricks and the stuff called cob, which is clay and sand and straw and stuff. It's kind of a sculpting material. You can go online and look up rocket mass heater, and they are such efficient heaters that you can make one in your greenhouse and use a handful of sticks as fuel. That's all you need, and it will keep your greenhouse warm for 2 days.
Wow.
So you know, people who spent a fortune having to clean, keep their greenhouses warm using gas and all that other stuff, it's not very sustainable. But you can make your own, and there are several videos online that are just really easy to copy and use, or you can even buy books on the subject to give you several different varieties of style, whatever suits your area. But if I had any flat space on my land, because it's, mm-hmm. you know, Hillside Gardens is the reason I call it Hillside Gardens, because it's
a hillside.
Yes.
You get your exercise.
You gotta have one leg longer than the other around here.
Well, Diane, we're getting to near the end of the show, but I do want us to mention about food preservation as a way to continue the season. Things like picking your green tomatoes and ripening them through the winter. Tell us, we did a whole show about food preservation, but let's just talk a little bit about how you can use the idea of preservation to extend a season.
Well, anybody who's worth their salt around here knows how to can. So, you know, as you get ripe food, you preserve it. You can it, you make jelly, you freeze it, whatever. Or right before you know that it's going to do a hard freeze, because tomatoes last through a frost if you cover them with plastic, but they will not handle, you know, 5-degree weather. It just doesn't work. So if you know that it's coming up, you just watch the weather and it says we're going to have a freeze. I go out and I pick every tomato on my vines, and then I put them in a cardboard box with a newspaper on the bottom, cover them with newspaper, and they will ripen from the inside out, and I will have tomatoes for another 2 months.
When I lived in California, I grew tomatoes. I grew heirloom varieties, indeterminate tomatoes. And so instead of growing like 3 feet, they grew like 15 or 20 feet. And I had them at the bottom of my deck, which was about 15 feet up in the air. And they would come and grow over onto my deck. And there was always, living where I lived in Northern California, there was always a point where it just got really cold, and that was the end of the tomatoes. And what I would do was, when I knew that that day was coming, because it would be on the weather forecast, I would just go out and I'd cut the whole vine, because what would happen is that as the vine would grow, we'd eat the tomatoes off the bottom, and then the vine would grow and there'd be new tomatoes and they'd get higher and higher and higher. And so I'd just cut off those ends and I'd hang the vine with the green tomatoes on it inside, so that then they would ripen right on the vine. And I thought that was very charming. It's like hanging herbs.
That's great.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it. And I think that it still had, you know, vitality from the actual plant still there to be nourishing the tomatoes while they were ripening. I loved
that. I'm going to try that. That sounds great. I never thought of that. You learn something every day, Deborah, I swear.
Well, I'm glad I could teach you something, Diane. You know, I really did so much gardening when I was in California. I learned how to garden in California, and none of those things still apply in Florida. I just have to learn all over again. And so, you know, it's that trial and error and experience and talking to other gardeners and all those kinds of things that make gardening interesting. But I really, I honestly can say that I'm just getting a yearning for having an edible garden. Just as a being, I want to be able to eat food that I've grown, food that has just been grown by nature and natural things, and not go through the whole food system. But I just want to be able to go out in my backyard and pick my tomatoes and pick my lettuce and my cucumbers. I grow really wonderful cucumbers here. I've learned how to do that. I grow parsley. I grow, what else do I grow? Spinach grows well here. Pineapple sage. And I haven't done it the last couple of years. And it's time for me to get back into it.
Well,
especially eating these bananas.
It's very satisfying.
It is very satisfying. It really is. So we just have a couple minutes left, Diane. Any closing ideas you'd like to share with us that we haven't talked about?
Well, I know a lot of people around here say, I don't have any time to grow, and I don't have any space to grow, and I can't grow. And I go, that's not necessarily true, because you can put, I recommend people starting with 5-gallon buckets, you put some holes in, and start simple and small, and learn how to grow on a gradient scale of expertise, because you're not going to just learn it. It's not osmosis, you know. You've got to trial and error. And so start. Just start with whatever you have available. And if you have a little space in the backyard, fine. If you don't and you have a flat roof, put something on a flat roof, you know. Make sure that it's solid enough that it's not going to fall in on you. But just start, because I think we really need to grow our own food. It's getting more important that we are self-generating food, and that we know what's in our food, because we're getting so many toxins and junk from the commercial foods, even sometimes from commercial organics. There, you don't know what's in it. You know, you don't know how they grew that. So, I think growing your own food not only is very satisfying and spiritually satisfying, but also it's very survival, just to know what's in your food and grow it. Anyway,
I
have a blog, so I wanted to tell people it's
thegardenladyofga.wordpress.com,
and I'm going to be coming out with more and more information, so you can plug into me, and I hope that I help you become more self-sufficient and learn how to grow the most magnificent food you ever saw and tasted.
And you will love to do it, I'm sure. Another thing that you can do, if you don't have very much space or you're just getting started, is that you can just go buy a plastic bag of potting soil and just cut some slits in it, and then put your plants right in the bag of potting soil. And anybody can do that. Anybody can do that, and you'll see that it grows. The other day, I have a beautiful bush called a sweet almond plant, and it grows very well here, and I have one on each side of my front door, and it makes these little white flowers, these stalks of little white flowers, and they smell like almond. They smell like a almond angel food cake. and so I walk up to my front door and I smell these beautiful plants, but they were getting kind of leggy. I've got to go. It is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. We had an interesting show. Anyway, be well. Come back tomorrow. Bye.